Hello, I'm Preston Schleinkofer. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio, where we discuss all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disaster might affect you and your community. This week, we are going to discuss why civil defense and how I came about my conclusion. So we will begin at the beginning in that for those of you who have been around for a while and listened to past episodes, you probably have a little idea of my background. For those who are new, let me go through it briefly. I have 22 years in the military, active guard and reserve components. My last 12 years were in a nuclear biological chemical defense company in the National Guard, where I was a platoon sergeant. I was a platoon sergeant for the reconnaissance platoon, which is the MBC reconnaissance platoon, one of the four decontamination platoons, and also the non-commissioned officer in charge of the training platoon. So I have a variety of background there. And the first 10 years of my 22-year career was in military police work. So that was the beginning of that. Plus, I have 27 years of federal law enforcement. My first 16 years were with the U.S. Border Patrol on the southern border with Mexico in the great state of Texas. I enjoyed my time in Texas. I spent 16 years on the border and rose to the rank of supervisory U.S. Border Patrol agent. And I was also the Border Patrol representative to the Joint City-County Emergency Operations Center. And my duties there enabled me to get some great training that they brought in to train up everybody that was assigned to the EOC. So I got to work hand-in-hand with both the city-county law enforcement and fire department, and also city and county leaders. And that was quite an opportunity, and I really enjoyed it. We actually had two live emergencies, both floods, where the Rio Grande River went over its banks and into neighborhoods. So we responded, and we got to put all of our training and exercises into practice as far as that goes. We had other exercises that dealt with different things, but that was the gist of the actual emergencies that we dealt with was flooding. At the time, we had somewhere around probably 700 plus Border Patrol agents in the city and county area where we worked, and so we had quite a force to provide assistance to the community, and that was quite a help to them. We were the dominant force, put it that way. Then my military career as a nuclear biological chemical NCO, we did the military operations and provided MBC reconnaissance, where we tested and evaluated lanes where the military would go and where units would go into the battlefield. We would go out and test them to see if they were safe or if they were contaminated. And if they were contaminated, then if the battle commander decided to go through that area, we would have to decontaminate them after they were completed. But they would also have to be geared up in the MOP gear, which is a mission-oriented protective posture, and there's different levels of that, and so they would have to be forewarned. Decontamination, that was a giant car wash, so to speak. That was very labor-intensive, especially in the Texas heat. It was brutal, to say the least. But that's an idea of my background doing that. And then after Border Patrol, I transferred to ICE, worked as a detention and deportation officer, which is a GS-13. and then a supervisory detention deportation officer in headquarters as a section chief of an intelligence cell where we had a variety of things. I managed a bunch of analysts, which the numbers always fluctuated because of mission dictates, but it was a very educational and rewarding part of my career. That's I did that for a couple of years, and then still in the intelligence field, I transferred to a unit outside of headquarters. It was the Human Smuggling and Trafficking Center, or HSTC, also in Washington, but it was a block and a half away from the White House. That was a lot of fun. We tracked alien smugglers from point of origin all the way around the world and to the United States. So it had a lot of gratification when things got put together and we were able to arrest people before they got to the U.S. So it was quite an interesting career, 27 years doing that. And while I was at headquarters, I was on the Intelligence Continuity of Operations team, which is COOP. COOP is Continuity of Operations. And we would go to a secret location up in the Virginia Mountains and continue operations there. If something happened in D.C., we would relocate, or we would locate up there if we were responding from home. And so that was interesting because I had just gotten married, and I came home and told my wife and said, "Hey, guess what? Well, if something happens in D.C., I get to go to this secret location up in the mountains." And she worked in D.C. at the time, too. She goes, "Well, what about me?" Oh, man, that was short-sighted on my part. What I did was I thought, you know, hey, what is there for family? What is going on? What is available for people that don't have this golden ticket to a secret location up in the mountains where everything is safe and secure and they've prepared these facilities for government officials to go and hide out and wait for the situation to calm down to a point where you can go back into D.C. and operate again. So what I told my wife at the time was, well, I'll take you with me, and if you don't get let in, then I won't go in either, and we'll figure it out from there. And so we didn't have to put that into practice, which was good. It did start me on a quest to find out what was available to John and Jane Doe. And what I found out was disappointing. So my research led me in a lot of various directions. It led me to some prepper novels, some military writings, led me to information in various books that authors like Arthur Bradley, who wrote this little pamphlet. It's a small book, Disaster Preparedness for EMP Attacks and Solar Storms. I read the book One Second After by William Fortune, which I highly recommend. Everybody read that book. It will be an eye-opener. Even though I was in an NBC unit in the military, I retired in 2000. So the EMP Commission didn't produce their first unclassified report until 2004, so 4 years after I retired. We weren't even taught anything about EMP threats when I was in. So 22 years, you know, we had very little. We had a mention of what it would do to our equipment. That was it. I mean, just a couple mentions here and there, and it wasn't anything that was on our radar, so to speak. So it was very enlightening. I retired from ICE in January of 2015. And at the same time, Ted Koppel wrote a book, and it was released in 2015. It was called Lights Out. And he talks about the threat to our electrical grid from cyber. And not only just our electrical grid, but our entire nation. So there's a lot of great publications out there that back up the threats that we have talked about on this show before, as well as list on our website. In the early days, I wrote a guide. Let me backtrack real quick. Before I did that, while I was doing that, doing my research, I was putting things together, and one of the books that I ran across was Michael Mabee's The Civil Defense Book, which everybody should have that on their nightstand or their bookshelf. It's available on Amazon, but Michael's book helped me organize my thoughts into the realm that I needed to go at the time, which was forming a nonprofit organization that promoted civil defense in my resident state of Virginia, the great Commonwealth of Virginia. And so I wrote this guide called A Guide to Developing Continuity of Community Through Community-Based Civil Defense, An Introduction to a New American Civil Defense Structure. And so I'm going to be talking about that and just going through a few things here and giving you an idea of what is in that. Now, you can get this guide for free. It's on our website at civildefenseradio.com, right at the top of the page of our resources page, right at the top. It's the first item there. It is marked up as Civil Defense Virginia, and it's got our logo there. I wrote this for the Commonwealth, but it is available to anybody and everybody, because what it does, as I've said in my closing for however many episodes I've done so far, which is over a year's worth, this gets the conversation started. It's not an all-inclusive manual. It's not anything like that. But what you can do is you can get enough information to get the conversation started and get Michael's book, team that with this guide, and you can go forward from there. And so we're always available to help out, to answer questions, and you can reach us through our website. You can reach us through the Civil Defense Radio Facebook page, Twitter. You can we're available. We're available to help. But let me read you a little bit here from the book. I'm gonna go through a couple different sections in here. I'm not gonna go through the whole thing, but the introduction is pretty important. The current emergency management process has not worked well for Americans, as it has failed to see the value of the citizen population as resources for the community. The decades that have passed since the old Cold War era civil defense organizations were discontinued has seen an increase in severe natural and man-made disasters throughout the country. And the modern era has many new threats that were not foreseen when the current emergency management structure was created. The emergency management process that took the place of civil defense has looked at the civilian population as something to save, not something to employ as an additional resource for the benefit of the community. There is no concept of continuity of community today. Civil Defense Virginia understands the shortcomings of our current emergency management process and is working to correct them by assisting local city and county jurisdictions build a partnership with their citizens in true continuity of community through a community-based civil defense organization. A new call for civil defense. After the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001, and the increasingly serious threats from both state actors and non-state actors, there has been a growing call for the resurrection of some form of civil defense structure in the United States. Among those calling for this resurrection was a bipartisan committee in the U.S. House of Representatives. In August of 2012, two Republicans and two Democrats introduced House Resolution 762. The title is Expressing the Sense of the House of Representatives Regarding Community-Based Civil Defense and Power Generation. Even though the resolution failed to acquire a passing vote, the sense of the Congress is still important. The sense of that bipartisan committee was that a community-based civil defense program is a good idea for the modern era. Now, let me just interject here real quick. This was produced 8 years after the first Congressional EMP Commission report that was published in 2004, and then 4 years after the second one in 2008. In 2008, it was even more damning than the first one because they had a timeline there that described how many U.S. citizens would perish in the first 12 to 18 months after a total grid down, which is anywhere from 75 to 95%. We're talking a lot of people, most of Americans. Most of America would die of starvation, violence, and bad water, and disease. So the proposed House Resolution 762, it has a few elements in here. Number one, it encourages every community to develop its own civil defense program, working with citizens, leaders, and institutions ranging from local fire halls, schools, and faith-based organizations to create sustainable local infrastructure and planning capability so that it might mitigate high-impact scenarios and be better prepared to survive and recover from these worst-case disaster scenarios and be better able to affordably and sustainably meet the needs of the community in times of peace and tranquility. The second one encourages every citizen to develop an individual emergency plan to prepare for the absence of government assistance for extended periods. Third, encourages each local community to foster the capability of providing at least 20% of its own critical needs, such as local power generation, food, and water, while protecting local infrastructure wherever possible from the threats that threaten centralized infrastructure, and to do so with the urgency and importance inherent in an all-of-nation civil defense program developed by citizens and their local communities. And the fourth, encourages state governments and federal agencies to support the local communities to become stronger, self-reliant, and better able to assist neighboring communities in times of great need. Now, those are important, and those are very inspiring. And if we go back to our history of the original civil defense, we can look at how they were formed, some of the operations that they had, and the various things that didn't really work well, and we can try and eliminate some of that failure that they had. But one of the biggest failures that they had was it was government controlled. It was a top-down system that government controlled at the federal level, and it was a political football. Some administrations supported it heavily. Some administrations almost starved it. Matter of fact, the last administration to have civil defense starved it. And then FEMA took over. They absorbed some of the things that were originally civil defense, and then they changed all the marketing and everything for FEMA. Well, you know, I don't begrudge them at all for doing that. But what happened was with that transition, they totally transitioned away from national preparedness, and they went totally towards state preparedness for natural disasters. They did not any longer look at any external threats. And that's one of the things that we have in abundance today with Russia, China, North Korea, Iran, and terrorist organizations that you can't even name all your terrorist organizations out there because you need to count your toes too. There's a big need for local grassroots civil defense organizations to stand up in every city and county in America. And that's what this program is trying to do. We're taking the concept that we were developing with Civil Defense Virginia, and we're taking it to a broader audience in America and through Civil Defense Radio. There's a few other components in here that I want to go through. There's a mission statement. It's just a sample mission statement for civil defense. It's proposed. It says, to define the mission of Civil Defense Corps is an important step in knowing how it will operate in the local jurisdiction. Every jurisdiction will have their own priorities, but some basic elements will be present in every location, which are to educate local citizens, plan and prepare for emergencies, and respond to disasters in their local area. The mission statement of the local civil defense organization should look similar to this: to educate and promote individual, family, neighborhood, and community preparedness for emergencies and disasters, to provide disaster assistance and relief to local residents in the event of a disaster, to educate local citizens and provide planning and resource options to the local city, county jurisdiction for preparation and response to a worst-case long-term catastrophe affecting the local jurisdiction, causing it to go it alone. And the last one is to partner with the local jurisdiction through the emergency manager and emergency management structure to foster a holistic community-based approach to disaster emergency preparedness. And one of the things that I put in here is, and I feel it's important, that this be done by resolution. Now, the resolution 762 was from the Congress stating that it's a good idea for every community to have a community-based civil defense organization. So I think it appropriate that every city and county that is serious about this also pass a resolution. And I have a couple sample resolutions in the guide that people can use as sources. They can copy it completely as is, or they can adjust it for whatever they want. And everybody has their own threat matrix that they want to have. And so, like I said, every jurisdiction has their own priorities. So that's what you would put in your resolution. But let me read this section here. The governing body of the local jurisdiction should pass a resolution or resolutions acknowledging the threat to their locality, its citizens, and the need for the creation of partnering with a local civil defense organization. This is an important first step to inform local citizens that this is something serious and that they are being asked to step up and be engaged in their own safety. Appendixes A and B of this document contain examples of such draft resolutions and may be used in their entirety or altered to meet local requirements. The resolution should, in part, document the threats to the local jurisdiction, the state, and the country. There are already many threats identified by the state and federal emergency management agencies, both natural and man-made. The larger and more serious threats to our lifestyle are the ones that should be included into the resolution, even though they may be less likely to occur. You got to inform people of what threats there are. If you don't let them know about these other threats, even though they're low frequency, high impact, it has the possibility of coming about, especially in this environment that we're in 2020 right now. We've got China on the border with India causing trouble. Those are two nuclear powerhouses with a bunch of people. And, you know, they've had clashes already where they've killed each other's soldiers. So we live in a very volatile world. North Korea is talking about doing something against us. And Russia has already came out and said, anybody attacks us, we're nuking them. So we shouldn't discount any threat. We should have it listed in our resolution and in our analysis of potential hazards to our community. So continuing on, threats like a massive cyber attack, Russian attack on Ukraine power grid in 2016, a solar flare passing over North America, Quebec, Canada in 1989, knocking out our electrical grid, coordinated physical attacks on power generation and power transformer sites, which happened in San Jose, California in 2013, and an electromagnetic pulse attack, EMP, from one of the hostile state or non-state actors on the current world stage. The fragility of our monetary system to manipulation by these same actors is another risk that could potentially harm our country and our local communities. There are so many threats that our nation faces that we need to be prepared for and understand that they are real and they are potentially life-threatening to not only our nation, but many and possibly most of our citizens. So that's just a few pieces of the guide, a little bit about me. I want to close with my usual close, but first I want to let you know that I really appreciate you guys listening, and you know, part of my mission is to inform. It's imperative that this word gets out. And that's why I do this. I'm not getting reimbursed for this. This is all on my nickel. And even though my wife doesn't really like the idea, but you know, this is not a cheap operation. It costs money on a monthly basis. So it's my passion. It's my burden to bear. But you know, please spread the word. Spread my podcast, share them, send them to your family and friends, and visit our Facebook site and share that stuff. Like and comment too. We like to hear comments. We don't get too many comments on these things, and so that helps us with the algorithms in the various, you know, like Google and Facebook and things like that. It really helps us out a lot. And just hang in there and help us promote this. This is for you. This is for you and your family, your neighborhood, your community. So civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page at civildefenseradio.com. Be sure to check out our regular postings on Facebook at Civil Defense Radio and on Twitter at civil_def _radio, where we post information about the many threats we see to our safety and security as a nation, and also on YouTube. My YouTube channel is Civil Defense Radio Podcast. Just search for it there and you'll find it, and you'll be able to go back and listen to some of the old podcasts. It's a neat place. So I'm a big YouTube listener and watcher, and so I do a lot of stuff on YouTube, and I'm glad to have a presence there now too. But again, I wish to thank you for being with us, and please, really appreciate you. I really do. So please be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time. Goodbye.